This hour, we've been talking about cats, but I have to tell you, I'm a dog person. I mean, cats, they don't even like us. Dogs, though. Now, dogs have been our best friends for 36,000 years. That's loyalty. And now, anthropologist Pat Shipman says, if it weren't for dogs, we humans might not even be here. So to understand why, you have to go back 40,000 years or so. That's when early modern humans began moving into the territory of another advanced hunter-gatherer species, Neanderthals. And not too long after we showed up, those Neanderthals went extinct. There have been a lot of theories about why. Pat, did we just out-hunt them?
Yes, in a sense, I think that's the simple answer. We were better at it than they were. But the question is, why were we better at it? We didn't have some technological innovation like a machine gun.
Maybe we had sharper spears?
What I think we had is dogs. I don't want people to think, oh, they had retrievers or poodles or
corgis.
Afghan hounds or corgis. Yeah, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about probably a barely domesticated but special group descended from wolves. They were a little smaller on average than the wolves at the time, but they were still very big animals. I mean, at least German shepherd-sized.
But it sounds like the wolves would have been natural competitors or even predators of humans. Why didn't the wolves just eat the humans?
I'm sure they did if they could. But in some way, humans and dogs formed a kind of cooperative alliance. It benefited both of them hugely. Wolves hunt in packs. They already cooperate with other animals in their pack. They're very skilled at this. They are very adept hunters, and they will separate out an animal, even a very large one, isolate it, surround it, charge it, wear it out, harass it until it's exhausted. Now, a wolf would then have to go in and pull the animal down. That's when they get hurt. If, however, at that point, humans come in, and humans have bows and arrows and spears with spear throwers, they could kill the animal at a distance, which is a big advantage, saves risk to the wolves. But because they're working with the wolves, they get the benefit of the attributes wolves or wolf dogs have that we don't. They're faster than we are. They can track by sense of smell. They can track by hearing. They have weapons, if you want to think of their teeth as weapons, attached to their face. I would not give a human any chance of taking down even a small deer with their teeth, right?
So, even in Wisconsin, which is big hunting territory, I haven't seen anybody take down a deer with their teeth yet.
No, much less a mammoth or a bison.
Well, so it sounds like what you're saying is that this was a really natural alliance, that the wolf dogs could hunt the mammoths down, exhaust them to the point that the early humans could come in and finish them off. Were there any other advantages the wolf dogs gave the humans?
Oh, yes. Wolf dogs, I am presuming, but it's certainly true of wolves and dogs today, are extremely alert, and they are very territorial. They defend their kill. This means if you've done something like killed a 1,000, a 2,000-pound animal, maybe even a 5,000 or 6,000-pound animal, you don't have to cut it up and run away with a piece before somebody comes and takes it off you. Hanging around carcasses is a dangerous thing to do.
Really? It was risky once they'd brought down a mammoth to chop it up?
Absolutely. If you think of the African savanna today, a lion brings down a large antelope. Almost immediately, other scavengers are there trying to take pieces of it, trying to take over the whole carcass.
So that was the case in Northern Europe? Would, I don't know, saber-toothed tigers be lurking in the wings to take down the early humans and steal all the mammoth meat?
There were saber-toothed cats, a form of leopard, cave lions, cave hyenas, wolverines. So all of those would be wanting to get a piece of this carcass that you'd just gone through the labor of tracking and killing. But if you're there with dogs, you can camp right next to the kill because you've got a built-in defense to help you protect that carcass.
So I know a lot of your evidence comes from a prehistoric site in the Czech Republic.
Yes.
Like a kind of mass mammoth kill. Can you describe it? I mean, what do you see there and how does it kind of change the way we see this early human history?
Well, it certainly changed it for me. I've been to several of these sites. They are usually up on a low slope of a mountain. They're near water. They're near rivers. Some of them, and this is the most wonderful stuff, have huts built out of mammoth bone. Some of them, and this is the most wonderful stuff, have huts built out of mammoth bones.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's just amazing.
What do they look
now,
like?
They look kind of like squat tents. And undoubtedly, they were covered in hides. They have hearths inside. Some of them have areas where people made tools, stone tools, areas where people seem to be cooking.
So these are really early settlements. And then how many dead mammoths?
In some of them, it's several hundred. Wow. In some of them, it's at least a few hundred. And before this time, if there was one or two mammoths in an archaeological site, it was remarkable, kind of notable. The idea that there would be these mass piles of bones, even if you allow that it happened over time, maybe happened once a year for a number of years, it's still pretty astounding, and it's a big improvement in hunting ability.
So, Pat, you're painting this picture of the way humans and these early wolf dogs would have worked together, kind of formed a hunting alliance. Why didn't the Neanderthals do the same thing? They were hunting and predators in exactly the same area. They presumably might have actually seen early humans and wolf dogs working together.
I suspect they did see each other, although we never will know that for sure. One reason may simply be intellectual. That is, as you know, if you've ever worked with animals, some people are really good at reading animals and some people don't understand, you know. The dog's jumping up and down and barking at the door, and they don't know what that means. So it may be Neanderthals didn't have the ability to empathize the way modern humans did. Another possibility, which is testable and therefore I think a really interesting idea, is this. We humans are the only primate that has highly visible white sclera to our eyes. That's the what you call the white of your eye. What this does for you, I mean, it's clearly a biological genetic adaptation, and it makes the direction in which you are looking very evident to another individual who is looking at you, working with you, or whatever. It means if you're hunting, you don't have to shout and point and say, I'm going to run around this way, you go the other way, which kind of blows your cover. But it means you can coordinate, you can hunt more sensibly, more efficiently, because you can communicate.
Well, Pat, you argue that this dog-human alliance we've been talking about not only wiped out the Neanderthals, dogs and humans together proved to be kind of unbeatable, kind of like the original invasive species.
I think as an invasive predator, we were. And it strikes me as naive that people don't think they are an invasive species. We have moved out of Africa into every habitat, every continent, nearly every island in the world. And it all starts with going into Eurasia and developing this cooperative arrangement with dogs. And since then, we have moved around the world, taking over place after place after place. And at the time this was first happening, there were no domestic animals. I don't think the idea of domestication had ever occurred to anybody. So you have to see this as happening almost a little accidentally, probably with somebody picking up a wolf pup. And most of the time, the wolf pup would grow up and would bite somebody, and that would be the end of the wolf pup. But then, you know, there might be some that weren't quite so aggressive, or that were a little better at communicating with humans, or that saw they might get something out of this deal if they didn't bite the humans.
Is this kind of what you call the Jagger principle?
Yes, out of I can't get no satisfaction. That is, you can't always get what you want, but if you try sometimes, you might get what you need. And so maybe wolves didn't want to become dogs, but it proved very helpful to them and to us.
Pat Shipman is the author of The Invaders, How Humans and Their Dogs Drove Neanderthals to Extinction. That's it for the conversation about cats and dogs. But don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. That way you'll never miss another hour. To the Best of Our Knowledge comes to you from Wisconsin Public Radio. This week we say goodbye to producer Sarah Nix. She's heading to sister station WNYC for more adventures in public broadcasting. We'll miss her bright, shining presence, her luminous smile, her talent and drive and voice, and we wish her all good fortune. This week's production team includes Charles Monroe Kane, Doug Gordon, Raymond Tangakar, Craig Ely, and Joe Hartke. Our theme music comes from Steve Mullen from Walk West Music. Kirill Owen is our technical director. Steve Paulson is our executive producer. I'm Ann Strainchamps, and thanks to you for listening.
PRI, Public Radio International.